Spring Summer in Baltimore, about to be Iraq.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_bball. We're going to be covering the action from Thursday, all six of those games, previewing a 10-game slate for DFS for Friday and talking about some big news around the NBA as well. So Michael Bolton,
Let's get to it indeed.
But let's start off with some of the news. I guess it's partially fantasy relevant, but not really. More relevant for you guys playing playoff DFS, but it is big news across the entire NBA landscape. And that is the news that Kyrie Irving is going to be out for the remainder of not just the regular season, but also for the entirety of the playoffs. John Corrales of Locked On Celtics has a quick reaction to that Kyrie news and what it means for Kyrie and the Celtics and the NBA moving forward. So I'll play that for you now.
John Corrales here from Locked On Celtics to talk about the breaking Kyrie Irving injury news. He is going to have surgery on his left knee to remove screws that were implanted in 2015 when he fractured his patella. Now, you might remember a few weeks ago, he had surgery on that same knee to remove a supporting wire that was also part of that same injury. Now what they have found is an infection at the site of the screws. So they're going back in. They're going to take the screws out. They're going to clear up the infection. The Celtics say his knee is structurally sound, but it's going to take 4 to 5 months for everything to recover and for him to get back to playing basketball. The Celtics' focus has always been on next season, especially after the Gordon Hayward injury. But now they definitely will not have Kyrie Irving back for the playoffs. After the initial surgery, they had thought maybe he'd return at some point in the first or second round. Now that is out. So the immediate impact for the Boston Celtics is Terry Rozier is probably going to move into the starting point guard role, a role that he has served well for the Celtics so far in Kyrie's absence and in Marcus Smart's absence. They hope to get Marcus Smart back at some point in the first round. He's had that thumb surgery to repair a torn tendon. So hopefully for the Celtics that he comes back, but immediately they will not have Kyrie Irving for this playoff run. It's going to be tough getting out of the first round for the Celtics. If they do and they get to a second round, that's going to be especially difficult. So I'm sure teams are going to start lining up hoping to play the Celtics in that second round. That specifically would be Cleveland. Long term, they say the knee is structurally sound and they hope to start next season with a healthy Gordon Hayward and a healthy Kyrie Irving. And the Celtics' priority has always been that. So we'll see how that goes, but right now there's no further damage. It's not another injury. It's not a separate thing. It's all part of the same thing to clear up what they had done to fix his knee in 2015. And this should remove every apparatus that was in there. And once that's out and healed and the infection is gone, Kyrie Irving should be good to go. We'll see. That's the breaking news. I'm John Corrales from Locked On Celtics.
All right, thank you to John from Locked On Celtics. You're going to hear the rest of that sort of stuff on Locked On Celtics today. But there's a couple of things there, is that teams will be looking, I think, to try and get that seventh seed for a first round matchup against the Celtics and trying to get themselves into the second round bracket against Boston, which could impact the way that teams approach these final few games, teams down the bottom of the Eastern Conference playoffs, the Bucks, the Heat, especially in that, who's going to want that seventh seed more? It could lead to teams resting more, or conversely, teams playing extra hard in order to get into that spot against a team that is going to be without Kyrie and Marcus Smart. So that's something to have some pay some attention to. Obviously, it solidifies Terry Rozier's value, but I think it does more for those other teams that are going to be taking on Boston in that first round as they try and maneuver themselves into that position so that they can hopefully find themselves in that spot where they can take on the Celtics either in the first round or the second round of the playoffs. So it's going to be really intriguing to see how that all pans out. Also, just had some news break as I'm recording. Shams Charania has tweeted out that Marshawn Brooks has agreed to a guaranteed 2-year deal with the Memphis Grizzlies. Now, he's on a 10-day contract, But being a guaranteed two-year deal means that he's going to play the rest of this season, but he's also got a guaranteed deal for next season, which is important for those of you in dynasty leagues. Brooks has shown excellent form so far in his time with Memphis. He's not going to, I 100% guarantee you, he will not continue to shoot at this level. But for those of you in longer term dynasty leagues, at least we feel a lot more confident that Brooks is going to have himself a position in the league and probably a rotation spot. Yeah, Mike Conley comes back, but they don't have an established two guard. Tyreek probably won't be there. So you could see Brooks getting a 20, 22, 23 minute a night role next season. Of course, there's a lot of water to go under the bridge there, but it is important that it's not one of those fake two-year deals where the second year is non-guaranteed and he could be cut in July. He can still be cut, but then the Grizzlies are going to be on the books for his contract. So some news literally just coming out while I was playing that Kyrie Irving clip. Let's get into the action from Thursday, though. The monstrous line of the night goes to Johnny Wall of the Washington Wizards. 28, 4, and 14 for John. 2 triples, 3 steals, 10 of 20 from the field, 6 of 6 from the free throw line, and some extraordinarily questionable decision-making down the end of that game that the Wizards were up by 17 midway through the fourth quarter and somehow lost to the Cavs. Wall is unlikely to play in tomorrow's game. It's a back-to-back, so he's likely to sit that one out. And that gives him just 2 more games for the remainder of the season, and the Wizards don't play again until Tuesday. They've got a Tuesday, Wednesday back-to-back, and he could easily sit one of those games out as well. So while it might seem weird that you might actually have to consider dropping John Wall if he's not going to play for 4 days and potentially 5 if he sits out that game against Boston, you know, having him in your lineup for 5 days of zeros may not be worth holding on to him for one of those games on Tuesday, Wednesday. So that is something you are going to have to pay attention to. Obviously, injuries have crueled his year. He's the 35th ranked player this season. In large part, a big dip from last year because his percentages have dropped from 45 down to 42% from the field. He's improved his 3-point shooting, but the 2-point numbers have dipped. His free throws are also 8% worse. He was at 79 or 80% in each of the last 4 seasons. This year, he's at 72%. And when you go to the line 6 times per game, it's a big, big negative and it's a big, big swing. You are going to be able to get John Wall at a significant discount in drafts last year. Just go search out. There's a post on the Fantasy Basketball subreddit near players to avoid next year. And you'll see players like Wall's name come up. And we can look at it and go, that 8% dip, that 4% dip in his field goal percentage, if they come back up, then he is back to being a top 15 guy, assuming he stays healthy. We have the concerns with his knee. We're always going to have those concerns because it continues to be a problem. But for the previous 4 seasons, he's played 78, 77, 79, and 82 games. Even with having knee concerns this year, it's been obviously nowhere near that at 40 games so far. But the narrative of him having knee problems, which is true this year, and it's been true in the past, he's missed no games. Yeah, prior to this year, he'd missed fewer games than Damian Lillard had over the last 2 years, and everyone holds Damian Lillard up to him made out of vibranium / some other material that are adamantium. That's the one I was looking for. When Wall's played more games than him over those past couple of years. So it's been a disappointing year. A couple of things, obviously, to do with that, but I think a bounce back's in order, and I reckon, not locked in yet, I think you might find Johnny Wall available in 3rd round of some drafts next year. And I will be 100% there for it. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Bojan Bogdanović. 28, 3, and 2 for Bojan. 6 triples, a steal, a block, and 11 of 13 from the field. As we talk about with this guy so often, is when the good games come, they come on stupidly high shooting, as it was in this game, as he hit 85% of his shots. He has now gone at 50% or more in 7 of his last 8 games, which is obviously a crazy amount. But you go back before that, and the preceding 5 games before that streak were 40%, 22%, 57%, 10%, and 9%. So we can talk about a guy just swinging wildly. That's exactly what Bogdanović is. He has hit at least 2 triples in 7 consecutive games. He gets you no defensive numbers, no assists, limited rebounds. He's a points and threes streamer that when he gets cold, there's nothing else there. So we know that he can be valuable. We've seen him be valuable. Over the last 2 weeks, he's the 31st ranked player. Over the last month, which includes this recent hot streak and that terrible cold streak, he's the 126th ranked player. Just goes to show you how much of a difference a 10% jump in field goal percentage, which is what that last month to last 2 weeks split it does for a player's overall value. It gives him an extra 5 points per game, an extra three per game, plus that huge, huge boost in field goal percentage, which has really, you know, pushed him right up. And yeah, that's the risk that you have to take if you're looking to add him. He could be excellent. He could be shitful. There's very little in between with what Bogdanovich does, given how much of what he produces is based entirely on that points and threes categories. The young gun of the night goes to Jarrett Allen of the Brooklyn Nets. Only the 4 points for Jarrett, but 10 boards, 2 assists, and 5 blocks gets him the nod. It wasn't like it was the greatest night for first or second year players, but those 5 blocks are obviously pretty sexy. He's a top 100 player over the last 2 weeks in only 25 minutes per game and scoring under 10 points and under 6 rebounds per game because he's averaging 2.4 blocks and shooting 57% from the field and has his free throws up to 73% after a little bit of a wobble at times there, although he is a 77% shooter for the season. He's a guy that when we look at his per 36 numbers, they're pretty bloody enticing. 15 and 10 with 2 blocks on 58 and 77. They are the numbers that if he was at 30 minutes per game, he would be a top 50 guy. Now, I'm not sure that he gets to 30 per game, but we've had this stigma attached to Kenny Atkins. It doesn't play anyone 30 minutes per game. Have a look what Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is doing recently. He is getting massive minutes almost every night. You're seeing, and it does vary quite clearly. We've seen it often, but when a player starts establishing himself, he'll happily go to them and he won't play them all 25 per night. We saw Damari Carroll with a nice stretch of over 30. We've seen D'Angelo Russell play decent stretches there. And Allen could be that guy. Maybe it's not next year and there'll be a lot of uncertainty with him. But after that, I feel pretty good about him being one of those guys who can be a 2.5 to 3 blocks per game player. A 12 and 9 sort of a guy on pretty close to elite percentages. Upside is limited by low usage and by the ability to not hit threes, or sorry, to not take threes. You can hit him okay. I think he's at 29% this year, which is not great, but it's on very, very minimal attempts. And you're not a big steals guy, not a big assist guy, and that's always going to limit his upside, but he can be really good in the categories that he's good at. Plus you add the extra benefit there of him being a solid free throw shooter this year, and that adds something extra onto Jarrett Allen. The dud of the night. Miles Turner's been putrid recently, 8-3 with 1 assist. Just another absolutely disgusting performance from Turner. You'd think for all the vitriol that gets sent towards Turner, he's outside the top 200 on the season. That's not the case. He is the 59th ranked player, and it's a significant departure from where we thought he would be. But recently, the last 2 weeks, terrible. Outside the top 140, under 10 points per game, 4 rebounds, 1.3 blocks, 39% shooting, which is obviously a massive reason why those numbers have dipped as far as they have over the last couple of weeks. But overall for the season, why are his numbers down? Well, he's playing fewer minutes per game last season, which is almost unheard of given, well, not unheard of, but in the beginning of the season, I didn't think that was going to be possible. He played 31 minutes per game last year. The team lost Paul George and they needed him to step up and he's playing fewer minutes. His efficiency has dropped from the field, from the line, but he's shooting the three ball better, but still not doing that at an elite level. The rebounding numbers, they're about the same as what they were last year, almost exactly the same per 36 minutes. The block numbers are about the same as well, but what has dipped is that efficiency, and he hasn't taken the requisite step forward in usage that we would have hoped. Only 0.5 percentage points of usage higher this year than last year, and you combine that with playing almost 3 fewer minutes per game, and he hasn't taken the step forward. He's taken the step backwards, which is obviously that concern. I think that Miles Turner, again, browse that Reddit post about guys to avoid. Everyone's avoiding Miles Turner, which means he's going to dip and he's going to be able to be drafted outside the top 50. And much like Victor Oladipo this season, I'm all about it. I think there's going to be great value in Miles Turner because he gets those extra 3 minutes per game back. He converts the shots from 48% up to 52%. And he goes from 2 blocks to 2.2 blocks, 2.3 blocks. Maybe. I'm not never confident of him becoming a 10 rebound per game guy. But I think he can average 16 points per game. This is all conjecture, obviously. And he's been a big disappointment, but I still think there is, he's only young. What is he, 22? Yeah, he's 22. So there is still a lot of room for him to improve in the NBA. Speaking of guys that, you know, we didn't quite get right in the preseason, myself and Kyle McEwen are going to do a podcast next week where we go over all of the things that we got right, in the preseason projection stuff and the stuff that we got wrong as well, and try and work out reasons why it was right, why it was wrong, and what we would do differently. So we're going to be doing that podcast next week. I think, knowing the way that me and Kyle talk to each other, we will probably go long. So I might end up splitting that into two podcasts, maybe a things we got right pod and a things we got wrong pod. So that'll be coming next week with myself and Kyle. That does it for the awards for the day. Let's swing on to the games and talk about all six of these across the NBA. Some interesting games, no doubt about that. The first one, the Warriors got smashed by the Pacers. Quinn Cook was strong again, 12, 3, and 6. The shooting dipped a little bit, only 42%, but his minutes are going to be high and he needs to be owned in all leagues. Draymond, Clay, Durant, they did what they needed to do. Well, Kevon Looney returned. Played the 23 minutes, did his defensive stuff, and which is why you own him. 9.5 usage, you shouldn't give a shit about that. It's about the steals, it's about the blocks, and he had one of each here, and he can be a real weapon in providing that value off the waiver wire. They did start JaVale McGee. We're getting Damian Jones minutes, David West minutes, Jordan Bell minutes, Zaza Pachulia minutes. So we're getting five centers playing in a game at a time here. Jones has shown a lot. I think that with the likelihood that Looney moves on next season, with the likelihood that JaVale and Pachulia aren't there as well, yeah, that Bell, Jones are going to have to take steps up next year, and yeah, we've seen quite a bit from both of those guys, so something to just file away in the back of your mind for dynasty-type formats. Uncle P was shit-outs as well, while Andre Iguodala didn't play, but he's likely to return on the weekend. For the Pacers, Oladipo, another three steals, man. Just every single game. 21-6-7 for Vic, while Daz Collison had 15-5-5. The Deuce had 16-8, while DeMontis Sabonis stepped up, while Turner sucked. 13-9 in 24 minutes for DeMontis. He had a triple one as well. His upside is always going to be limited by the fact that Turner is there, but he can produce these nights on occasion. Very little else to talk about, I believe, with the Pacers, but that's a huge win for them, a team that many people were doubting, including myself, heading into this season. The Washington Wizards and the Cleveland Cavaliers, massive win for the Cavs. I talked about the Wizards already. They choked it away late. Beal was strong. Otto Porter had 18-8, while Markeith's strong play continued. 15-5-4 for Markeith Morris, and Markeith Morris does need to still be owned in 12-team formats. Marcin Gortat played way more than I expected. In fact, he actually played in the fourth quarter, which is a rarity. 10-7 in 25 minutes. More just a 16-teamer, maybe 14-teamer. Well, Thomas Satoransky only played 16 minutes, but he's going to be back in the starting seat for Friday, so you might be able to add him and get some value there. Oubre, terrible. 6 points in 23 minutes and realistically just a streaming option. On to the Cavs.
LeBron James.
33-9-14 for LeBron. Really excellent once more. While Kevin Love on fire early, ended with 16-6. They started Jeff Green, and they're going to continue to start Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
Much to my chagrin, he's going to be starting for the rest of this season, regular season and playoffs. I just don't think he's very good, but obviously it's not a great time for me to have said that, considering he scored 21 points on 80% shooting. But if there's one thing, if you take one thing away from listening to me on this podcast, is that 80% shooting nights, they don't continually happen. And when you do literally nothing else, one rebound and one assist, when you don't shoot 80% from the field, A, you won't get that many shots, and B, you'll end up with 8 points and one rebound, and people will go, 8 points and one rebound in 30 minutes? Shit else. Because that's what Jeff Green is, realistically. But to be fair to Green, this is his best season in about the last 5. He was dreadful in his time, the Clippers, the Grizzlies, the Magic, but he's been better this year. He should not at all be starting over Larry Nance, in my opinion. But that's the way they're going to go. Chetty Osman closed the game, had a key steal late, had two steals and two triples, but he was getting the start because Jose Calderon and George Hill were both out, while the Plumber and Rocket Rodney Hood, they played minutes in the mid-20s, but didn't do very much, and you should not be owning either of those guys. In any 12-teamers, Larry Nance, look, that's good. 10 rebounds, 1 steal, 2 blocks, but I can't rely upon him to produce that level of form in under 20 minutes, and it appears like under 20 minutes is going to be what they keep him at, which again is nonsense. The Portland Trail Blazers and the Houston Rockets, no Dame Lillard, so Shabazz Napier started, shot poorly, 8 points on 9 shots, 4 rebounds and 1 assist, but Wade Baldwin the fourth, another good game. That's 2 good games in a row from Baldwin when Lillard has been out. He played 32 minutes, so shared the court quite a bit with Napier. 14 points, 3 assists, and 2 steals. Now, if I'm going to use the same logic I use for Jeff Green, I have to do it here, because 60% shooting from Wade Baldwin's not going to continue. But I like what he can do. I liked him heading into the draft. I thought that it was disappointing that he didn't get retained by Memphis and that they didn't play him as much as possible last season. But I'm not getting ahead of myself here, but it is definitely something to watch that he does have these abilities. And what he's producing now is getting more in line with what I thought about him heading into the draft. He just showed none of that in Memphis. So let's see how that goes. The Chief.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
4 points for Aminu, 7 rebounds, 2 steals and a block. So you like the rebound, steals and blocks. That's nice. And that's really where he's going to help you. But beware your field goal percentage. Nurk had 14 and 11, while CJ McCollum had 16, 5 and 4. Zach Collins saw Caleb Swanigan get more minutes than him, mainly because his shot was well off, 0 of 4 from the field for Collins. And Yorgios Papayannis actually played in an NBA game for Portland. Very little to talk about, though, with him, as Myers Leonard lost some playing time here too. Chrissy Paul, Jim Harden, they were both excellent. While Trevor Ariza returned from his rest and played 27 minutes, I don't think that Trevor Ariza is a 12-team league guy. I would much rather move on from him and grab a guy like Marshawn Brooks or Dylan Brooks or Benny Macklem or Ivan Rabb. Or, yeah, I know there's a lot of Memphis guys there because 7 of their guys are ruled out, I believe, for tomorrow. Yeah, he's not a must-own guy, Trevor Ariza. Gerald Green got his minutes. They're going to be consistent. Didn't shoot well. Two triples in 6 points on 2 of 9 shooting. But he's going to get those minutes, and you're going to get threes out of him on a fairly consistent basis. The Brooklyn Nets and the Milwaukee Bucks, that's a massive win for Brooklyn. The Bucks are up big. I know I told this story earlier in the week because they were up big on the Nuggets and let it slip, and they did the same thing here again. I love what I'm seeing from Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. 37 minutes for Rondae, 14, 11, and 5, 1 steal and 4 blocks, and got a legitimate chance to be a top 50 player next year. He has, since returning from this injury, has been really excellent. Jumpin' Joe Harris and the blue swimmer Alan Crabb, they combined for 8 triples. 25 points for Crabb, 17 for Harris. You know, some weird out of the ordinary contributions. 6 assists for Harris and 7 rebounds for Crabb. But realistically, we're looking at them as points and 3 streamers. But they are helped by the absence of Damari Carroll. And I don't really think we're going to see Carroll again this year. D'Angelo Russell, 29 minutes for 22 points, while Spencer Dinwiddie went down to 25 minutes and had 9, 2, and 6. And I don't think you should be, you know, really considering relying upon Dinwiddie, but I'm sure you're all well aware of that fact. On to the Bucks, Middleton, Yanni, Bledsoe, all pretty strong. In fact, they tallied 10 steals between them, 2 to Chrissy, 4 to Yanni, and 4 to Bledsoe. While Jabari Parker, another game of over 30 minutes. He played 32, he had a 13 and 10 double-double. Yes, he took 21 shots, which is clearly way too many, especially when you're hitting 29% of them. But the minutes up from 24 to 30 is really interesting for Jabari and makes him worth looking at. Now, when Brogdon and Dellavedova come back, does he see his playing time dip, or do they just 100% eliminate Tone Snell, Shabazz Muhammad, and Jason Terry from the rotation, or Sterling Brown? So they've got other options there, because honestly, Tone Snell, man, he is terrible. 1 rebound in 16 minutes for him. Nothing else. The Muppet had 12 and 5 with a block. That's John Henson. He should be owned. He missed all 4 of his free throws, which is terrible, but he should be owned regardless. The next game, the Clippers and the Jazz. The Clippers are done. I think that's it for them. I don't think we see the Rooster Danilo Gallinari again this season. They had to start Ty Wallace and Sindarius Thornwell, with CJ Williams getting some of those minutes. Very little happening with any of those guys. Wallace can be a defensive stream guy, but his numbers have dipped a bit, and I'm not sure that you should be relying upon him in 12-teamers. The table, Montrezl, I think you can. 17, a steal, a block, 64%. You want points, you want rebounds, generally, and you want high field goal percentage. It's pretty hard to go past the table. While Austin Rivers had 19 points and Toby Harris was down, but still had 11-7-2-2-1, so a nice full box score. Onto the Jazz, ravishing Rick Rubio. His hamstring bothered him again. He lasted only 8 minutes for 9 points, and that meant that Dante Exum got to step up. 10-4-5 for Dante with 2 blocks. Royce O'Neal started the second half, but Exum is the guy who put up the majority of the value there. And if Rubio misses time, I think they might start Royce, but I think that Dante will get high 20s in minutes, and he has been very, very impressive since returning from his shoulder injury from a real-life perspective, but also putting up some numbers in a fantasy point of view as well. Jay Crowder only played 5 minutes due to a corneal abrasion, but he is going to be fine for next game. Gobert, Ingles, the Don, they were all strong. Where Alec Burks chucked in 13 points in 17 minutes, but he is realistically a deep league point streamer if Rubio misses. Jonas Jerebko also got that bump with Crowder out, 13 points for Jonas in his 24 minutes. The last game of the night was really an important one in terms of the playoffs. The Minnesota Timberwolves fall to the Denver Nuggets by 4 points, and this was as infuriating a game as you can get, no matter what side you were going for or if you were just watching it neutrally. It was a horribly played basketball game with horrible coaching decisions, which has been the trademark of both of these coaches for pretty much all of this season. Just some mind-numbingly stupid decisions continually happening. The Nuggets get the win. The Timberwolves in danger now of slipping out of the playoffs. Let's talk Minnesota first. Jim Butler was active and available to play, as was Derrick Rose and Jeff Teague, but Butler did not play. So that looks like his return is going to come tomorrow against the Lakers, so we should see Butler back. But you would imagine he'd be on a minutes restriction. The problem is that his coach's idea of a minutes restriction is probably 39 minutes, so you could see Butler go out there and play a ton. But at least they are being sensible with him, which I do have to give credit to Tom Thibodeau about. Andrew Wiggins was just atrocious. 9-6-3 in 33 minutes. I don't think he is ever going to be a good fantasy player. I'm not even sure he's ever going to be a good NBA player. He is just piss poor nearly every time that he's out there. While Derrick Rose had 4 points in 15 minutes, playing more than Tyus Jones, which again remains ludicrous. Taj Gibson, 17 and 14, a monster from him. He should be owned. Well, Townsie, he fouled out, 26, 13 and 4 for Karl Anthony Towns. Jeff Teague was back, 15, 3 and 6.
My name is Jeff.
Of course, you just keep playing him because his team needs to win out to make sure they remain in the playoff mix. The Denver Nuggets, great win from them. Still just confusing shit from Malone all the time. Like, why are we in the fourth quarter with 6 minutes to go in a must-win situation? Why are you bringing in Nikola Jokic to play alongside Mason Plumlee? Now, Plumlee gave great minutes in this game. It doesn't mean you need to go to that sort of bullshit configuration. The other player who was awesome here was Devin Harris. 20 points in 20 minutes with 5 triples. Jokic had 16, 14, and 9, and Will Barton dropped in 14, 6, and 6. Offensive rebounds really the key in this game. The Nuggets just continually grabbed them, especially late. Millsap struggled his way with his shooting, especially 12 of 7 on 12 shots. Well, Trey Lyles didn't see the court in the first half, but played 4 second-half minutes and had the old 4 trillion. The Blue Arrow was strong. Baby Neck was poor. Really very little change in terms of fantasy value for either of these teams. But again, remember, we should be seeing Jimmy Butler back in action for tomorrow's game against the Los Angeles Lakers, which would be Friday. Let's do some DFS stuff now. Let's go by starting with the perfect lineups from Thursday. FanDuel, Johnny Wall, 56.8, Eric Bledsoe, 40.6, Middleton, 44.3, and Brad Beal, 40.8. The small forwards, Bojan Bogdanovic, 38.6, and the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, 38.9. Thaddeus Young, 42.1, and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, 44.7. Interestingly, those last four players I mentioned all used to play for the Nets. Some of them still do. Bogdanovic, Crabb, Young, and Hollis-Jefferson. And actually, I should have just included the fifth bloke in that. Jarrett Allen is the center in the perfect lineup. 33 points for a total of 379.8, and that cost $59,400. On DraftKings, Dante Exum, 27, the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, 40.75, Otto Porter, 36, LeBron, 64.75, Hollis Jefferson, 44.25, Johnny Wall, 59.5, Jumpin' Joe Harris, 32.5, and Taj Gibson, 38, for a total of 342.75, and that cost $49,900. Okay, we have got 10 games on Friday. There are going to be some absolutely tanktastic bullshit things going on, so be very, very careful what you do. The first game is the Dallas Mavericks and the Detroit Pistons. This is one of those games where there's going to be some weird shit going on because the Mavericks are, well, currently they have Dennis Smith Jr., Salah Mejri, and Dwight Powell all listed as questionable. Dirk is done for the season. Nerlens Noel is done for the season. JJ Barea is done for the season. Wes Matthews is done for the season. Seth Curry is done for the season. So we are going to be getting Jalen Jones and Kyle Collinsworth and Aaron Harrison and John Motley. I think it's really doubtful that Dennis Smith plays in this one as the Mavs look to accumulate ping pong balls. At point guard, Reggie Jackson's at 6,100. I don't mind him as a cash option. Yeah, he was a little bit disappointing last game in terms of minutes, but still had 24 points, and that's not a horrendous result there. Well, Ish Smith played quite well, but I wouldn't be banking on that sort of a game. Dennis Smith, excellent the last time he played, but again, the odds of him playing are pretty minimal, and the odds of him going for 32 minutes are also fairly minimal. So you can look at a guy like Aza Harrison, who had 24 last game. It took him 42 minutes to get there, but at 3,800, if we see Smith's ruled out, then Harrison becomes a pretty good option here. At shooting guard, Luke Kennard, 38. Love it if I knew that he was going to play enough, and I don't with Van Gundy. While Kyle Collinsworth at 3,900, some real value can open up with him with a 34-pointer last game, and I imagine the Mavs will run a very similar lineup that they did in that game against Orlando. Reggie Bullock's at 4,500. I just think it's too high for him. John Motley, listed as a small forward, he is going to be their starting center. He's at 3,700 and put up 27 points in 41 minutes against the Magic. Going against Andre Drummond's a little bit different to Bismack Biyombo, but I think that he should be able to at least rebound his way into enough value to get past $3,700. So I think Motley is definitely an option here. Dorian Finney-Smith at 3,700. The pencil Harrison Barnes or Stan Johnson, not really spectacular options. I think Barnesy could see his minutes at least capped in this game, while Stan at 5,200 has been really strong lately. I can't wait to speak to Kyle about Stanley Johnson. But of course, we can't have full faith in Johnson doing this every single game, but he does make an interesting tournament option. At power forward, Powell, Anthony Tolliver is probably the only guy I really like here, 5,400. I don't like Dwight Powell or Hank Allison, Maxi Kleber, who was playing too well, so he only saw 12 minutes last game, or Eric Morland, just very little to like in this one. Andre Drummond at 10-5, the matchup looks good, but what minutes is he going to play? What's Van Gundy going to do? Now, Stan played him 38 minutes last game, not sure that he'll do it here, but Van Gundy hasn't thrown in the towel. Tanking disgusts him, apparently. So does good personnel management. 10-5 for Drummond, you have to put him as a tournament guy. You can't go there for cash. And of course, Salah Mejri is Salah Mejri. Let's go on to DraftKings now. Yeah, very little to love here. Drummond at 98, again, a strong tournament option. You could consider Reggie Jackson, and then a lot of those injury type scenarios. Yeah, as Harrison, John Motley, Kyle Collinsworth become options, especially if Dennis Smith is sidelined, as we're expecting at this point. The next one we're looking at is the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Philadelphia 76ers. Ty Lue, who was back for the Cavs today, said that he thinks that the preserving health and resting is more important than going for seeding. But I think getting that 3 seed is really, really key here, especially getting yourself a matchup with the Celtics in round 2. Not to discount what Boston's done, because they've been excellent all season, but at some point, the attrition has to wear away when you've lost 2 of your best 3 players, and then the replacement to Kyrie and Marcus Smart's unlikely or possibly not going to be there. You're getting that 3 seed and playing them versus playing against the Raptors, who should be fit and fully healthy, even though I'm sure the Cavs aren't scared. There is impetus there. Dario Saric has been upgraded to questionable. Of course, Joel Embiid is out, and we don't know about Georgie Hill or Jose Calderon for the Cavs. Hill's at $4,000. He's way too inconsistent. You can't lock him in for cash. Markel Fultz and McConnell, no way. Shooting guard, Jordy Clarkson at 42. Always worth a tournament look if Hill is out, but that's really about it. Well, Rocket Rodney Hood, Kyle Korver, and the plumber J.R. Smith are some tournament guys that I don't feel good about. J.J. Redick at 5,400 has been consistently good with a 30-point average over his last 5 games, which is perfect at 5,400, and I feel okay about him, especially if Dario is sidelined. As for Bellinelli at 47, he's more up and down than what Redick is, so I'd be looking at him as a tournament type of a player. Small forward, LeBron.
LeBron James.
He is at 11,400. He is always fine to use. He's getting you 55 almost every single game, so no issue with LeBron. While Bob Cove, FanDuel's reacted and they've bumped his salary because he is putting up monster numbers. 6,800 does take a lot of the appeal away from Covington, but I think he's an elite tournament guy with his ability to get steals, which have been first rate. Šarić at 6,500. Amir Johnson, Ilyasova, Kevin Love. No one there really stands out as spectacular. I really like Ilyasova, though, in that role, especially if Šarić is out. He's averaging 29 over his last five. But even if Šarić plays, it doesn't completely eliminate Ersan because he's playing quite a few center minutes with Embiid out, and that does give him that opportunity, especially against a Cavs team that's going to employ Kevin Love at center quite a bit. Love at 7,600 has been excellent. But is he $7,600 worth of excellence? I'd have to wager no. Benny Simmons is at 9,600. The numbers have been pretty solid. Against Cleveland, he has struggled a bit. Only averaged 37 points against the Cavs so far this season. At 9,600, though, I don't mind him as a cash guy. I think he's got a relatively solid floor. His last game was his worst game in his last five, and that still netted you 35 points, so far from a disaster. Jeff Green and Larry Nance. Well, Green at minimum, or not minimum, 3,700 as a starter. I think you have to look at it. I think you absolutely have to consider it, and I wouldn't hate it in cash. At center, Rashawn Holmes is at 4,700. Up and down in terms of playing time and production. Yeah, or in a game that is quite important for this Sixers team, he could be all over the place, especially if Šarić plays. But in a tournament setting, he's got 30-point upside, 35, 40-point upside even. So you have to consider him in that sort of a situation. Over on DraftKings, we're going to look at Holmesy again at 4,500. LeBron at 11,500 is pretty strong. But everyone else, it falls into a similar situation as they do on FanDuel. No other glaring value options apart from Ilyasova at 5,700 and Redick at 52, but they're still not quite as sexy as what they might look on FanDuel. Let's go to the next game. We're looking at the Atlanta Hawks and the Washington Wizards. No John Wall, so Tomas Satoransky will likely get another start. We're looking for the Hawks. DeAndre Bembry is listed as probable, but Taurean Prince is questionable. Bud, you're not going to win. So yeah, it doesn't matter about Prince, but of course, if he is out, then we're looking at Tyler Dorsey. We're looking at Damo Lee. Maybe we're looking at Antonius Cleveland to even take on some extra playing time. But of course, I would go with Lee and Dorsey over Cleveland pretty consistently. They're at point guard. Satoransky's at 5,500. The numbers have been down, obviously, because Wall's been back. But we've seen him drop 40-point games this year. It's a perfect matchup. He is going to be putting up numbers. I'm in on him. Isaiah Taylor at 5,300. The numbers have definitely waned from him. More of a tournament-y sort of player. At least he doesn't have John Wall to go up against. Tyler Dorsey listed as point guard as well at 4,200. I like it. And I think there's opportunity for him to actually get better than that. Shooting guard, Damo Lee is at 5,300. If Prince is out, I think that's cashy. If he's in, it is more tournament just because it's sitting above $5,000 and he's far from the most reliable guy. While Brad Beal's at 86, I think that is way too high for Bradley Beal, even with Johnny out. Otto Porter's at 7,100. Happy to go with Otto in this one with Wall sideline. I think that's a solid price. He had 38 today against the Cavs. I think he's worth looking at. Oubre, no. The artist formerly known as Taurean Prince at 5,800. If he plays, he can very easily exceed that, but we don't know. And we don't know what Budenholzer is going to do. If the game gets close, Prince won't play. So he is a tournament sort of guy you can take a look at. Power forward Markieff's at 62. 58, I'd be all about it. 62 just feels $400 too high, clearly, because I just said that. I still think that he's got a relatively safe floor that you can consider. While the Baptist, John Collins, is at 6,100, also feel pretty good about his floor and pretty good about his ceiling. So I think that Collins is a pretty good option here. Gortat at 4,100, great matchup. Centers go well against the Hawks. Do they enable him to play a big role here? Not so sure about it, but it's one of those ones where I wouldn't discount using Gortat. While Muscala, Plumlee, and Mahinmi, as well as The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, no one really stands out as being an awesome option there. The Undertaker at 5,500 has a little bit of appeal, but it's far from a lock or anything along those lines. On DraftKings, Beal, Satoransky, and John Collins, I think, are all in good cash and tournament spots, while Damo Lee and Isaiah Taylor are interesting tournament guys, as is Tyler Dorsey, who I think you could probably consider even a cash guy at 3,900. Let us go on to the next one now. We've got the Charlotte Hornets and the Orlando Magic. This has got shit show written all over it. John Isaac is out. John Simmons is out. Nick Vucevic rested last game, so he could be back. Fournier is out. Trevion Graham is out. Terrence Ross is out. Dwayne Bacon is out. Kemba Walker has been disengaged. He could see his minutes dip. So there's a lot of weird shit going on. We've seen DJ Augustine's minutes go down too. So that's why I like Shelvin Mack at 5,200. His minutes have been fine. They've been actually pushing up and he's been getting good playing time and he's producing. So I like using him here. Kemba Walker's at 74, big dip, and that's because he's averaging under 15 points in his last three games. Now, it's a perfect matchup. It's a great matchup, but how much is Kemba going to play? I would consider him a tournament guy because I wouldn't be stunned if he bounced back, but I wouldn't be locking him in. DJ's at 4,500. The minutes are well down. Big price dip, but still not happening at that price with that way that his playing time has reduced. While Rodney Purvis is a minimum salary guy, and he could get some minutes. We've seen it a few times, him and Jamal Artis, and they could be GPP-only sort of players. At shooting guard, Malik Monk at 3,800. Love what Monk's been doing with a 25 average over the last three. Could he push for even more? Absolutely he could. So I think that Monk is a strong, strong tournament guy here. Batum at 6,000, I want absolutely nothing to do with. Love Hezonja as a small forward, 6,000 for Mario, averaging 31 over the last five. Happy to lock that in. Awundu, Kid Gilchrist, Jez Lamb, Jamal Artis. Well, Artis maybe for a tournament. The other guys, I'll leave alone. Frank the Tank Kaminsky's at 39. That's a pretty fat no from me. Marvin Williams, Kem Birch, Aaron Gordon. Birch at 4,200 I like. I think there is definite upside in him. Aaron Gordon at 73. The salary is coming down, but not enough. I think that's a fade there. At center, Bill Hernan Gomez is at 4,600. Bill, even in a limited role, is averaging 28 points in 18 minutes across the last three games, which is fine at 4,600. At 4,100, I'd say lock him for cash. Let's get 22 and be done with it. But at 46, it feels a bit high, but I don't think it's a complete disregarding type of situation. Dwight Howard's at 8,700. You can go revenge narrative all you want. I just don't think he's going to play enough. Although he did have 51 points in 32 minutes in his last game, but his last three against the Magic have yielded just 35 points in 31 minutes. I don't think he is the strongest option. While Nick Vucevic at 9,000, do we get limited minutes, Nick Vucevic? You're bloody right, we do. Let's look at this one over on DraftKings. Hezonja, Shelvin Mack, and Bill Hernan Gomez. I love Bill here because he's at 3,900. Mack at 46 is one of the stronger players of the day, as is Hezonja at 59. Vucevic at 7,700. That definitely tickles my interest. As a tournament play, I think it's fantastic. Cash, I'm not so sure. Well, Dwight at 9,200 is a scary, scary proposition. Malik Monk at 4,400 also, I think he's pretty good on DraftKings. Let us go on to the next one now. We've got the Indiana Pacers, the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors are favored by 7.5, and the total is 208.5 points. Injury-wise, we're pretty much all good for this one. Lowry's at 7,500, and Daz Collison's at 59. Love what Daz has been doing, but both of these players are very good defensively, and they've been really good at limiting opposition fantasy output against them all season. So that's an element of risk with both of those players, but given I think that you think the Pacers are going to be going all out, I don't think the Raptors will be. I think that Collison at 5,900 is not a bad one there. I think his upside is pretty limited though. There is the chance, because the Raptors are pretty much locked in at that one seed, that we get more bench unit, more Fred VanVleet, more DeLon Wright, and limited Lowry, limited DeRozan. I think that Dwayne Casey will be very cognizant of that fact, and that's going to allow some of those bench guys to perhaps jump up in value. DeLon Wright was excellent last time out, 41 points in an almost triple-double performance. Shooting guard, DeMar DeRozan, 7,700. I'd love it if I knew that he'd play 35, and I don't, so I don't love it. Oladipo, he's just doing it every single game. 9,500, though, is probably a little bit too high. He's been great. He gets steals. His lowest score in his last five is 43 points. That's how good he's been, but I just feel there is no value in using Oladipo at 9,500. Small forward Boyan, yeah, always a great tournament guy. We know that. We highlighted that earlier. Well, Lance Stephenson, the Jedi, OG Ananobi.
Hello there.
Glenn Robinson III, the little dog, and CJ Miles are all small forward options that you should leave alone. At power forward, Serge Ibaka's at 5,700. The numbers are up for Serge. I actually don't hate it, but I also don't love it. He's averaging 32 over his last three, which clearly goes past or exceeds that $5,700 price point. Again, just a real worry with the minutes. While Sabonis at 4,000, I like Sabonis here as a GPP guy with an opportunity to really exceed 30. Young, Thaddeus Young that is, Pascal Siakam, Trevor Booker. Yeah, I don't hate Young at 5,700. I think there is some cash workability there. At center, Miles Turner's down to 6,100, being guaranteed putrid. This is a positive matchup. The salary is cheap enough that I would consider him for tournaments, but literally nothing else. While Valanciunas is a no-go, in my opinion, with the way the minutes are looking. And Jakob Poeltl's at 37. Maybe. He can easily get you 25 in 21 minutes. And that's intriguing, but not enough for me to lock that in as a cash one. Let's go on to DraftKings. Miles Turner's down at 5,800. Again, the same rationale there. Let's have a look at it in a tournament, but that's about it. Well, Daz Collison at 55 is pretty good for cash, but I love Pascal Siakam at 3,500. That's very, very low. And he does have that ability to get you 25 here, maybe even 30, especially if they go heavy on the bench unit. So I think that he's worth looking at. Victor Oladipo at 87 is also pretty bloody appealing, given the way that he has been cranking out the numbers pretty much every game. The Miami Heat, the New York Knicks, the Heat rested Goran Dragic, they rested James Johnson, they rested Dwayne Wade last game. They're all going to be back for this one. Well, it's unlikely we see Enes Kanter for the Knicks, and Mick Beasley is listed as questionable. So if Beasley is out, we're probably going to get more Isaiah Hicks, more Luke Kornet, and some more minutes for Courtney Lee and Frank Ntilikina there as well. At point guard, Trey Burks at 6,200. He is consistently producing, with the exception of last game where he only had 25 points. But I like Burke here. Very little else to like in this game, to be honest. Tyler Johnson's at 4,500. Good record against the Knicks. But I think the Heat are going to really start going into rest mode. Ntilikina's at 3,500. Dragic is at 6,900. And while the Iron Shoulder will be back, he's not going to be extending into big minutes. Shooting guard, Timmy Hardaway at 6,000. I feel good. I feel confident in his floor, at least, which makes him an okay cash guy. They've shown no interest in reducing his minutes as much as they've done to everyone else. And that's an admirable thing, I guess, from our point of view, at least, for Jeff Hornacek. Everything else, bad. 5,300 for Dwayne Wade. Yeah, Wade's been putting up the numbers. He's averaging 28 over his last five. I don't, in any other time of the year, I would say that's not bad for cash, but of course, yeah, Wade could just skate by on 17 minutes per game for the final couple of games and no one would think twice about it. The Duke, Courtney Lee, Damian Dotson, no. Small forward, Justice Winslow, no. Michael Beasley's the one you want to look at, but with an illness still bothering him, 6,900, a fairly hefty price tag, it's pretty hard to get too excited there. Well, Joshie Richardson, you know I like him, and he's probably going to be, and I haven't done them yet, probably going to be on my all-defensive team, one of them. But 6,500 in a rotation spread rest type of scenario, I find that hard to get behind him. At power forward, Luke Kornet, minimum salary, only tournaments obviously, but an opportunity if Beasley sits, and of course with Kanter unlikely to go, there is something there. Jim Johnson at 65 is too high, and Olynyk at 7,000 is miles too high. Centers, Cock, 6,800 for Kylo Quinn. I know he's good. He's not that good. And he had 41 last game, and he could very easily get you 35 again. But we've seen O'Quinn have real consistency issues, and that's the problem at that salary. Tournament, he could get 50. No worries. Cash, he'd get 20. And that's the real problem with utilizing him at such an elevated price. Whiteside's at 7,300. I think that is too high as well. While Bam Adebayo, I just don't think the minutes are going to be there unless some random weird resting kicks in. For DraftKings, Trey Burke and Kylo Quinn, yeah, really good options there, especially Cock at 5,700. Totally fine with that. While Beasley at 63 is a good tournament play. Of course, assuming that he is ready to go and ready to play. Let's go on to the next game now. Again, this is not a good DFS slate. I can't stress this enough. The Chicago Bulls and the Boston Celtics. Lauri Markkanen will play, but he'll unlikely to play on Saturday. Of course, no Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, Robin Lopez. Don't think we're going to see him. We've got Noah Vonleh as questionable, and Paul Zipser has been ruled out again. I don't think we're going to see Zipser again this season. Point guards, Jaren Grant, Cameron Payne, the minutes are getting split. Grant producing more, he's getting more minutes. Neither of them are appealing in the slightest. Well, Terry Rozier could not ask for a better matchup. 6,800 for Rozier. It's a stretch as a price, but I feel a level of consistency in him. You know, he shot terribly last game, and he's not like he's immune to poor shooting nights because he's not a good shooter in general. But I think he's worth looking at that sort of a price. Then you've got Shane O'Larkin, who should be back, and Ryan Arcigiacono, who should not be playing in the NBA, but such is April basketball. At shooting guard, the sexy boy, Sean Kilpatrick. Sean, you should unblock me. I don't know why you hate the sexy boy nickname. If that was my nickname, I'd be all about it. 4,300 for the sexy boy. The shots are going to be there. This is something I said when he was signed. He's going to take that Antonio Blakeney role, and that role is take the shot every single time. And that can convert into numbers. 32 points last game, 29 minutes. Why not? I think he is worth looking at, especially at a low price of 4,300. While Justin Holiday, the former title holder of the I will take the worst shots in any game that I play in title, he's at 3,900. He had a big game last time as well. And with the hammer Denzel Valentine ruled out, along with Zachy LaVine, then Holiday's going to see his minutes push up and he becomes a tournament guy again. Jaylen Brown's at 5,300. Great for tournaments, but I just think that he's not even going to get to 30 minutes given how the Celtics are just going to be so cautious with everything. David Nwaba's at 5,000. Nice game last time. I think the upside's pretty limited and the floor's pretty low, while Tatum's at 6,400. Good matchup for Jace. That price is not good, and I don't think that it's worth pushing onto him. I like Marcus Morris, though, 5,700, and you can cut that audio out and you can play it back to me at any time, because me saying I like Marcus Morris is not something that happens all that often. Really, you know, really maxes out the ship bloke level, but, and you're not good basketball player a lot of the time as well, but he's been good down the stretch. I might hate on players certain times, even though I hate that phrase. But when players are playing well, I've got to give them credit, and that's what Marcus Morris is doing at the moment. He's doing great stuff for this injury-riddled team, and I think he's a fine guy to use here. Punch Bob's down to 5,600. He was way too high for a very long time, Bobby Portis. And I think at 5,600, it's fine to get back on board there. He's not going to play 30 minutes. He's going to be locked into 22 or 23 as they give minutes to Noah Vonleh and Chris Felizio. But Bobby at 5,600 is worth having a look at. Markkanen's at 5,700. One thing you can guarantee is he won't play big minutes. I can 100% assure you of that. It hasn't mattered recently. The numbers have been huge, but I also don't think that that's sustainable, that level of production, 41 points per 36 over his last five games. Noah Vonleh's at 43. Maybe more of an option for Saturday when Markkanen sits. At center, Al Horford's at 7,100. I'd love it, but the minutes and the Bulls and all that sort of stuff. But Greggy Munro.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
5,300 for Munro is definitely a turnoff in terms of price, but he's been putting up some consistent numbers. I just don't think that the upside is high enough, and I don't think that the floor is solid enough either. Bainesy and Felizio, they're not doing it for me. Of course not. Over on DraftKings, Horford, 7,000 is a tournament sort of guy. Rozier at 72, nowhere near as appealing. The sexy boy at 4,300, I like quite a bit. Otherwise, everything else, you know, pretty much ties in exactly with how things look over on FanDuel, except Marcus Morris, way higher on DraftKings, 6,800, and that takes a lot of his value away, in my opinion. Let's go to the next one. It's the Sacramento Kings, and we've got them against the Memphis Grizzlies. If you're watching this game, if you are going to this game, I feel sorry for you. This is going to be atrocious. For the Grizzlies, they are going to be without Marc Gasol, Wayne Seldon, Jermichael Green, Chandler Parsons, Jarrell Martin, Tyreek Evans, Andy Harrison. Yes, that is all the players that are out. For the Kings, I don't think we're going to see Kosta Koufos or Zach Randolph. Scala Bissier is questionable and Garrett Temple is questionable. So prepare yourself for 22 minutes of Nigel Hayes and a 40 burger from Bruno Caboclo. This is going to be the shit show of all shit shows apart from final day Memphis versus Phoenix, which I believe, is it? Or is it Phoenix versus Dallas? Anyway, this is going to be terrible. Absolutely terrible. But there's going to be value opening up here. Trusting it is another matter. Point guard, De'Aaron Fox, 5,800. Foxy's been playing very well, getting extended minutes and producing 35 points in the last three games. 5,800 is expensive, but I actually do like using him here. While Frankie Mason's down to 36 because his minutes have plummeted for whatever godforsaken reason. Marcus Teague and Mario Chalmers, very little for me to care about with either of them. The value that we're looking at comes from the shooting guard position. Benny McLemore's at 3,800. I think he gets 20 pretty comfortably. You can go revenge game as much as you want. It's more about opportunity than anything. So I think he is a strong option. Mike Henry at minimum salary. Played 23 minutes last game. He's a tournament guy. Kobe Simmons is a minimum guy. Another tournament player is the starting point guard. While Bogdan Bogdanovic on Sacramento, he's playing quite well. They could limit him just because of the tank nature of this game. But at 5,500, there is something there for Bogdan, but I wouldn't feel super comfortable locking it in, nor would I with Budrick Hield at 6,100. Small forwards, this is where I love it here. Marshawn Brooks, 4,800 for Marshawn. Obviously killing it every game since he's returned. That is not going to continue. Write it in as much indelible ink as possible. That will not continue, but it might for one more game. So at 4,800 for Brooksy, Marshawn, the Brooksy of the Marshawn variety, you have to look at it, and you would prefer him clearly over Dylan Brooks at 4,500, who is just nowhere near the scorer that he is. Justin Jackson was good last time, but he has been good exactly one game in his NBA career so far, so that sort of level of shooting is unlikely to continue, but with who knows how many guys sitting out in this game, 4,100 for Justin Jackson is a very good tournament play. Power forward, Ivan Rabb, 4,100. Here for it completely. No Jarrell Martin, no Jermichael Green, no Marc Gasol. It's going to be Rabb and Deontay Davis in this front court. So Rabb at 4,100. I am locking it in. And that is, it's true. It's locked in. Locked in. Labissiere, I don't think he's going to play. Let's look at the center. Deontay Davis, 3,500 for Deontay. He's got 30-point upside. He's got 40-point upside. He could also score 5. But who the hell else is getting these minutes? Gasol's not there. Green's not there. Martin's not there. He's going to have to play a lot. And he's going to block shots. And he's going to score efficiently. 3,500, that Davis-Rab front court you can lock in and get them for 7,600. And potentially get 60 plus points out of them. I don't see how you cannot do it. And it's purely a factor of the shitfulness of the injury report. Corley Steins at 6,500. Played 37 minutes last game. 39 points. Probably doesn't play that many minutes as they try and get Jakar Sampson and Nigel Hayes into play center to try and lose. But Corley Stein has definitely got a good matchup ahead of him. Whether he can continue that at that sort of a price remains to be seen. Give me Davis at $3,000 less. Over on DraftKings, it's a similar story. Rab, Marshawn, Foxy, Benny McLemore, and then you got some tournament punt guys of Kobe Simmons and Mike Henry, and Deontay Davis there, of course, as well, at $3,300, which is a stupidly low price. Not that they knew that every single dickhead in the world was going to be ruled out for Memphis, but that is a great price for Deontay, and he could bust easily. But even in a bust, he could pretty comfortably land on getting 20 points, even in a shit night, and that's value for Deontay Davis. Two games to go for us here. We're looking at the Pelicans and the Suns. Jesus. Another bad one. TJ Warren, Alfred Payton, Troy Daniels, Devin Booker, unlikely to play. Big Source, Alan Williams, also out with knee soreness. I don't think we see him again this year. Well, Jordan Crawford is back, and he signed with the Pelicans with Ian Clark out, so he's going to likely move into that Clark role. So at point guard, Tyler Ulis, 5,600. Bang, let's lock it in with those injuries. He's ready to go. Well, Rajon Rondo's at 6,500. Too expensive. I can get much cheaper production than Rondo in a game that could very easily and very well is likely to be a blowout. Shaq Harrison's at 3,700 as a shooting guard. He's an upside tournament sort of a guy. Daniel House at 42, who's played very well the last two games. And I think you do have to look at him as a tournament guy. While there is absolutely zero chance in the world, I would recommend spending 8,700 for Drew Holiday. Small forwards, Joshie Jackson at 8,000. The price keeps rising. He keeps producing. His lowest score in his last five games has been 36 points. It's very hard to go past Josh Jackson with literally nobody else of any discernible talent on this team. Etuan Moore, Darius Miller, Solomon Hill, no interest. Power forward, Sheck Diallo, minimum salary guy. 23 minutes last game, which is pretty appealing for a guy like Diallo. Normally, he would be able to retain value or return value at that salary or that playing time. He didn't, but this is a super positive matchup. I really think that he is an interesting tournament option, as is Mirotić at 5,500 and Marquise Chris at 5,500 on the other side of things. You might even consider him a cash sort of a player, just given the nature of who's in and who's out. Tone Davis at 13,000. Yeah, love Tone. That's too high. There is real blowout potential here, and I'm not sure we want 13,000 of Tone Davis. At center, Alex Len played 32 minutes last time for 35 points. He's at 4,800. Your confidence should be low in Len. Mine is, and I don't care that there's no other center around. We've seen that time and time again this season, that there's been no other center, and he plays 15 minutes. That probably won't be the case here, but I do think that you could use him in a tournament. But man, this is a guy who can get 5,000 in 10 minutes, and he's going up against Anthony Davis. That is a legitimate risk. I would not want anything to do with him in a cash lineup. On DraftKings, Joshie Jackson and Tyler Ulis are really strong plays there, while Mirotić, House, and Diallo are some pretty good tournament options, along with Len, and Marquise Chris, yeah, finds himself in the mix there as well. Tone Davis more appealing on DraftKings at 12,000 as opposed to 13,000. Last game of the night, the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Los Angeles Lakers. Jim Butler should be back for this one. Limited minutes would be my guess. Lonzo's out. Brandon Ingram's out. Luol Deng's out. I know you're stunned by that one. Brook Lopez is listed as probable. Point guards, Jeff Teague, 7,100. Even if they win by 50, he'll still play 35 minutes. I think that Teague is worthwhile. While Tyler Ennis has played well with a 27-point average over his last three games, he is a cheap point guard option if you want to go that route, especially with no Lonzo. Alex Caruso's been starting, but Ennis is getting the bulk of that run because Caruso's also playing in the G League playoffs, and they're limiting his minutes that way. Love KCP at 6,300, really strong option, while Josh the Hitman Hart's at 47. He's been a little bit up and down, but I still, even in the down games, you get your 24 points, and that is fine to use as a cash guy. Wiggins at 6,400 with the return of Butler imminent. He was trash today. I want nothing to do with him in this one. Small forwards, Nemanja Bjelica, Jim Butler. Butler's at 8,500. No thanks. Power forward, Kyle Kuzma, the future MVP, 6,700. Lock that in. Julius Randle at 79. I think he's also in a pretty good spot, but I'm less interested in that than I am in Kuzma. But still, there's some real value in you or some real consideration. And Taj at 5,500, I feel pretty good about having him as a cash option too. Centers, Townsy, 10,000. It's going to have to be him. Fine with using that. Lopez, not so interesting, while Channing Frye and Ivica Zubac played some big minutes last game, but the likelihood of that repeating itself to that degree seems pretty unlikely. If I was going to use one guy, it'd be Zubac at that real low salary, but I think you can find some other options around that are more appealing. On DraftKings, Randall, Kuzma, KCP are strong cash and tournament guys. Townsie's always in the mix. Tyler Ennis at 39 is an option there also, whereas Jim Butler's a way more reasonable 6,700, and I could understand the argument for putting him into a tournament lineup. Don't forget, guys, to check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, including NFL and Major League Baseball that we're kicking off at the moment. Check out Locked On Celtics to hear the latest on that Kyrie injury news that we got a teaser of before. Locked On Nuggets and Locked On Wolves are also going to be must-listen-tos after today's big win, big loss, abomination, bad decision-making, all that shit that went on. Go and check out them. Follow me, Josh Lloyd, on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. Check me out on Basketball Monster. And, of course, the Locked On Podcast Network at Locked On NBA Net. You can subscribe to this podcast. Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, someone else I'm missing, Spotify, YouTube. Subscribe, 5-star ratings, thumbs ups, all those sort of things you can do to help positively support the podcast is awesome. We are done here, guys. 1 week to go in the NBA regular season. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Malcolm Delaney.